You're tuned into Totally Unrelated. Enjoy.
And we're back. Welcome, brand new episode, guys. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for all of the support that I've received through this October endeavor of sobriety. And I got a lot of insight from people who have reached out and talked to me about their own struggles and their own issues, and also their own belief in continuing down the path that they're already on, whether that be having never touched a substance or never intending to stop touching substances. The choice is yours, guys. I think I don't think anybody's better for not. I don't think anybody's better for. So I just know that how I feel currently is not that much different than how I felt a month ago, save for the fact that I'm losing weight, probably due to less appetite. And I still eat, but also I've been doing this intermittent fasting. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's not. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it. The way I'm doing it is I condense all my meals between 12 o'clock and 9 o'clock, and so that means that there's roughly 15 hours that I'm not eating, most of it the time that I'm asleep. But I really can't argue with the results, because I've been exercising less than normal. I haven't been running. I thought I would be like busting at the seams to exercise, but no, not really, just kind of been recovering. I find that if I work out hard or work out at all for 2 months, I need to take a week or two off to kind of let my joints heal. There's always some pain. I'm never passively exercising. I'm always trying to beat my last run time or lift more weight than I did the last time I went. And then also, I think after 2 months, my body starts to get used to my tricks and stops responding to the exercises. I'm not big on trying brand new types of exercising. Not to say that I'm not open to it. I just don't practice it as much as I should probably. But thank you for all of the support and going strong. I have to say that at this point, I'm not taking any more supplements. The new mood from Onnit and the Alpha Brain. I took some Alpha Brain a couple of times and I didn't feel like it really helped me. But the research that I've done has shown that if you're getting these same supplements through your diet, then this isn't going to have much of an effect. I don't know that I'm getting all the nutrients I need through my diet, but I have not been eating bread and or potatoes or rice, which are some of my favorite things to eat. And that probably has something to do with the weight loss. But I'm down 9.5 pounds in 2 weeks, which is, I mean, without working out, I don't think I've ever experienced this before. Really, also no junk food. I've really cut down on the amount of crap that I put into my body. No desserts in this month that I can recall. No cheat days where I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to eat whenever, whatever. I don't know if that's the right way to live. Certainly, I believe in moderation. All things in moderation, including moderation. Somebody important said that. So yeah, I think that moving forward, it's too early to tell, and I don't think I'd ever make some sort of commitment to myself of always being a type of way, always being like clean living, always being never drinking again. I have to say, I don't miss alcohol in the least. The hardest part about it, though, is I was at this show we did on Monday here in Columbus called Last Realtor Standing, where we did it in Dayton. You know, we coach a realtor to do comedy, and then they perform for their peers. We sold out the Columbus Funny Bone. I think it was about 400 tickets, and it was a zoo. And realtors drink. And I have found that when you're not drinking, when I'm not drinking, my patience to be around people who are drinking is greatly reduced. So it was not easy to stay and hang out after the show. Not because I felt like I needed to have a drink. It's just how loud it is. I sort of feel like probably I was drinking as a social buffer or some sort of numbing myself to the annoyance of drunk, loud people, sort of like when in Rome. But I don't miss it. I didn't miss hanging out after the shows in Virginia Beach, which, thank you to Virginia Beach, Funny Bone, hands down, one of my favorite clubs in the world. I got so much love and so much support. And I don't know if that's because of the diversity there. They have, I think, every branch of the military is represented in that area. And I've never seen so many interracial couples of all sorts, black, white, Asian, what have you. It was everywhere. Biracial kids, I could see it all. And I, obviously, that's, I'm biracial. So maybe I'm looking for it more than other places, but it was just obvious to me that it's a special place. And when I mentioned it to them, most of the people that were born there hate it there, and most people that came after having lived somewhere else in the world love it there. So, however you got there to the show, thank you for your support. Sold a bunch of T-shirts and picked up some new podcast listeners from Virginia Beach. So thank you, thank you, thank you. It was a great weekend with John Morgan there. John Morgan, I don't know if you don't know, goes he's not goes by he goes by John Morgan, but people call him the Ragin' Cajun because he's from Louisiana, and he's got a very kind of Southern Bayou Louisiana twist to his comedy. He's a conservative, but he, drinks, smokes pot, and he's unabashed about it. He's very open and very, I don't even know what the word is. Fully expressed. Got no problem telling you his opinions. We had Travis Carl, who was the MC the first week I ever did that club. I went there with Bert Kreischer last year. Had a great weekend with Bert and Travis. And Travis and I went and saw Blade Runner 2049 on Saturday. Oh, what a great movie! Maybe the best movie I've ever seen. And I don't really even remember the original Blade Runner. It came out when I was really young. Apparently, it didn't do very well in the box office, but became a cult classic as it was being seen. So it's, I think for people, some people probably a little bit older than me probably have a little bit more memory or understanding of what was going on in that movie. I remember thinking just the name Blade Runner sounded cool, but also sounded a little bit scary. And I know I saw it when I was a kid. I just don't, I think it was way over my head. But Blade Runner 2049, ooh, it was artistic in its framing and cinematography. It wasn't overly indulgent with dialogue. It was a very good story. It had me hanging on every scene, and I think it was a pretty typical sort of journey for the first hour and 45 minutes, and then the last 30 minutes or whatever it is, I was like, I have no idea what's going to happen here. I have no idea. And that was great. It was like a roller coaster. I remember walking out of the theater feeling like I forgot what day it was or what I was doing before I walked into the theater. It really had me thinking about life and empathizing with the characters in a way that most movies don't, I think. I think the last great movie I saw before this was Planet of the Apes, the most recent one of that. And that was a very, it was heavy-handed in some of the dialogue and cinematography. Whereas I felt like Blade Runner 2049, it would like show the lead character's face for like what seems like 30 seconds, but it might only be like 10 or 12. But it was almost like, okay, I got it. But it was needed. It was almost like the movie could have been an hour shorter if they had just wanted to speed through it. But they really took their time with the emotion of every scene. And if you don't know what Blade Runner is, it's basically about a futuristic society, not too much different than where we are today. The original, I think, took place in 2019, 2 years from now, and they had flying cars. So, engineers, let's step up our game here because I'm trying to fly. But it was, I don't want to ruin it for you. All I can say is go see it if you're into dystopian sci-fi, which I didn't know I was, or even if I'm categorizing this genre correctly. But thanks, Travis. He got us into the IMAX. It was weird. I'd never sat that close in an IMAX. We were like basically at the middle front row not front row, but like, you know how there's like the upper seats and the lower seats? We were in the upper lower part of the lowest part of the seats. So I had to like turn my head to see different scenes at times. And I realized that sitting on the side of an IMAX theater, you don't have to turn your head as much. I wasn't sitting on the side, but I noticed that if we had been, you kind of can capture it all a little bit easier. So I don't know if you're into IMAX. I don't think I've ever seen a real theatrical performance like that. I think I've always just gone to IMAX in a museum and watched like This Green Earth or, you know, Fish of the Deep Atlantic. Either way, John Morgan, Travis Carl, Virginia Beach Funny Bone. Thank you. I had the time of my life. We won't do that, but I did watch Dirty Dancing while I was there, and it was on TV, so why wouldn't you watch it? Such a great movie. Anywho, moving through this October, I am feeling optimistic. I had some gaps in my calendar in November and December, and those are mysteriously filling in, which is really close to have those gaps fill in, but I'm very appreciative. And I think I sort of adopted this sort of Zen slash feng shui methodology of scheduling or looking for gigs, in that you have to, it's like fishing, you have to cast the line to catch a fish. But that doesn't mean if you don't catch a fish in the first 20 seconds or minute and a half of fishing that you reel it in and cast again in a different direction. Sometimes you just need multiple poles and you need to leave them in the water for a while. And sometimes you get a bite and sometimes you don't. But I don't think that there's any blueprint for how you move through a comedy career. All I know is that I'm very appreciative of what I currently have. And it was a couple of experiences this week that had me realize that. One was at the Virginia Beach Funny Bone. We had a guest set on Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And it's rare that you would have more than one guest set over the course of six shows. Two, not unheard of, but three, super rare. And then for the same person to be doing them all, makes no sense at all. But we had one comic from the Virginia Beach area who did a guest set both shows Friday, second show Saturday, and Sunday. We only did one show on Sunday. So that was like four guest spots. And it's not wrong. Guest spots aren't evil. Guest spot, if you don't know what it is, it's, you know, at a Funny Bone or an improv or a major club, usually there's three comics: an MC, the feature, which is what I am, and then the headliner. Now, sometimes you'll have somebody that's friends with the headliner and they'll come in and be like, hey, the headliner will even say, hey, I want you to do a spot. And so they'll do a guest set, which is usually 5 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes, we'll say, to be generous. This guest spot on Friday did over 10 minutes. I think like 12 minutes the first one and 10 minutes the second one. So John requested that that be cut down to five for any other guest sets, which is a tight spot. But here's the thing about a guest set. You shouldn't be asking for or doing a guest set without a very specific reason. And this guy was very unapologetic about how he's not trying to become famous or even really make a career out of this. He's just having fun. To which I say, then get off our show, because there's nobody here that's not trying to further their career. I mean, we are having fun, but we are working. And it's almost like it'd be like if you were getting married, and oh, that's not a good analogy. I don't even know what the analogy is for this, but it's basically eating for free. I mean, he's not getting paid or anything like that, but it's selfish. A guest set is very selfish, unless, say, you need a festival submission and you need it right away because you don't have any updated videos. So you go to the club and you're like, hey, can I get 5 minutes to videotape a set because I need a full room and I need to get this into the Tonight Show or Conan or my grandmother, whatever it is. Or you bring some people out that have never seen you and you're like the headliner, hey, can I maybe get a guest set so my family can see me do comedy? I mean, that's like a reason, right? But to just be like, oh, I just like the energy of the crowd. Oh, I just like, I mean, and the guy was nice, and more importantly, he was very funny. He got big laughs in the time that he was up there. But there's a audience attention span factor that needs to be considered. And there's a reason why there's three comics on professional shows, or two. A lot of shows I do is just two-man shows. I open, the headliner closes. And that's because the audience has a very limited attention span for anything. It's why movies typically are the length that they are. That's why a comedy show is the length that it is. Because if it goes long, even if it is really good, people start to get a little bit worn out. And we want them to be left wanting more. So, not judging anybody for wanting to do a guest set, but it is one of those things that if you are doing multiple guest sets on the show and you're not best friends with the headliner, know that we're talking about you behind your back. Not calling you a horrible person or anything like that, but this is what we got hired to do and paid to do. And when you come in and sort of act like you're entitled to that time because there's already an audience there, that's just not the time or place. We had to work to get to where we are. Even the MC had to work to become an MC. And when you come in behind the MC and do as much time as the MC, it's just not a good look, in my opinion. These are all just my opinions, totally unrelated, right? So anyway, that was one of the things that made me realize how lucky I am that I'm not in a position where I need to be asking for guest sets. I think I've done maybe four guest sets in my entire career, and if I did, it was because somebody else said, "Hey, no, do a spot on the show." I don't know if I've asked for guest sets before and been denied when I first started doing them, but that was before I understood what the whole methodology was. So if you're like a year in and you didn't know any better than to ask for a guest set, I'll give you a pass. And I give everybody a pass. I'm not mad at anybody about anything. The shows were fantastic and the guest set didn't take away from the show, which a lot of times a guest set, from what I've experienced, can bring the show down a notch. So, moving forward, coming out of I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning, which wasn't hard because I wasn't sleeping really well this past weekend. So I got up at 4:30 on Monday, drove straight back 9 hours to Columbus so I could be there for the last Realtor Standing show, which was, like I said, we did in Dayton. That was a lot of fun. This one was a completely different kind of experience because the one of the comics that was performing in this show used to be a comic and now he's a realtor. And also it's realtor, not realtor. It's real estate, but realtor. And I've always known that, but I often mistake how I pronounce it. And I heard realtors mispronounce it while they were on stage. So that was interesting. But the guy that used to be a comic murdered his set. I mean, just murdered. It was a damn near standing ovation. He's only been a realtor for 4 months here in Columbus. I think in general for just 4 months. So while he did very well, he could not overcome the guy who won, who's been a realtor for probably 20 or 30 years, and did a fantastic job. The laughs were so they do like a clap off to see who's going to win, and it was between the guy who was a comic and this guy who's been. It was between the guy who's a comic and this realtor who's been a realtor for 30 years. And when they did the clap off for all five comics, it ended up coming down to a clap off, a head-to-head clap off, and it wasn't even close. The older guy won, and probably deservingly so. So something sort of disingenuous, disingenuine. How do you say that? Disingenuous, disingenuine. Something a little off about being a comic formerly and entering this contest with a bunch of people who've never done comedy before. My tribute, the person I coached, probably got third. I think there was five or six comics, maybe six. I can't remember now, but she was very good. She stuck to her guns. She did the material, I think, as well as she could. I found that Matt, the guy who had been a comic before, he stuck to real estate as his topic. Main theme through his set was about real estate. And I think that is what hit so hard. And my person did stories from her life, which I'm more of a fan of because I'm not a realtor, but probably was maybe a little bit hard to follow. The other thing was is that her stage presence wasn't horrible. I've seen guys who have been doing comedy for years who didn't have as good a stage presence as her. But my advice, if I could have done it again, would have been to keep the mic in stand or practice standing still. Because when you start walking around and moving the mic cord and looking down, it takes away from what it is you're saying. And but I'm very proud of her, and I think she had the time of her life, maybe not the best time of her life, but I think it was a big kind of bucket list slash exciting moment. It's like being on a roller coaster performing in a room that big with that many people. I mean, the Columbus Funny Bone is like a palace. It's got three tiers of seating on the main floor and then two tiers of seating on the upper balcony area, and it was packed out and amazing, a lot of fun. What else did we have? Oh, and then last night I hosted the Columbus Funny Bone Talent Search, Comedy Talent Search show, which they do, I think twice a year, maybe three times a year here, where they bring in local people trying to break into the business, and it's a multi-level contest where they have a first round, a second round, and then the finals. So in the first rounds, they take, 7 to 8 people. I watched it last week. I was a judge, and it was a good show, top to bottom. Everyone did really well, so it was really hard to decide who was going to go through. Last night, there was a little bit more variation between polished and unpolished, and I saw a friend of mine from Cincinnati, who is a very good comic, not go through. And it wasn't because his jokes weren't good. It was almost like the audience wasn't ready for it, or because I think he went third or fourth or something, but I just felt like there wasn't any real polished comedy before him. So when he got up there and started doing setups and punchlines, the audience was a little bit like, oh, wait, what? It's kind of strange. He did get some good laughs, but certainly not the laughs that he deserved. And it made me remember back to when I did this contest many years ago. By many, I mean like 4. And it was a very bitter pill to swallow. I made it through the first round really easily, but then the second round, I was there before the show, and I didn't have to, but they did like a roll call to see who was there. And in the first show, they mispronounced my name. They called me Adrian Crosby, which is okay. I mean, I'm the last person in the world to ever get upset or offended when somebody mispronounces my name. I was in Yellow Springs, my hometown, just a couple days ago, and this guy Steve, who's a fixture of the community, has been calling me Aaron for the last 3 years, and he introduced me to somebody else, and so I corrected him when he introduced me. I said, "Actually, it's Adrian," and he was like, "Oh my God, I've been calling you Aaron for years." And I was like, "There was an Aaron Cosby in Yellow Springs who was more infamous than me for maybe less positive reasons, but ever since I entered elementary school, I have been called Aaron Cosby because this guy was like 4 or 5 years older than me, so it was Adrian Aaron, close enough. Even when I was in construction, people called me Aaron because I think they're not used to a guy named Adrian for whatever reason. I'm not going to make excuses as to why it happens. All I know is that I let it happen. I don't care. As far as I'm concerned, I just assume people not know my real name, and so that way, if something bad happens, and they'll be like, "Oh, Aaron did it," and they'll be like, "Who, Aaron?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, no, I'm Adrian. That wasn't me. Weren't me." But I remember when I did this contest in the second round, I didn't have to. I felt I needed to address that my name was Adrian Cosby because that's how I signed in. It was printed that way, but they were still calling me Crosby. So I was just like, "Hey, no big deal. Just want to let you know it's Cosby, not Crosby." But when I said it to this guy, he was like, and got up and walked away. He's one of the judges and the person that was signing everyone in. And when I went on stage that night, I could see the back of the room, and I watched him stand up and walk out of the room for my set. And then I watched him come back in as I was walking off stage. And so I knew from the beginning of my set that I probably wasn't going to advance. And I also knew about this contest that it's one way to get your foot in the door at the Columbus Funny Bone, but probably not the easiest because I wasn't from Columbus. I wasn't able to bring as many people for the second round as I did for the first round. And then I found out the next day when I was in Cincinnati doing the roast for Jay Armstrong that the other judge, I think there was only two judges that night, he was like, "I had you definitely going through, man." He was like, it was like not even a question that you should have gone through, but the other guy said, "No, it's not going to happen." And that's when I realized that, politics is as much a part of comedy as anything else that we do in life. And should I have corrected him on my name at that point? Maybe hindsight being 20/20, no. But I know this guy now. I don't necessarily feel like he likes me any more than he did then. But I also can look at him and tell that he's not the happiest individual. Not to say that he's not happy in his own life, but he doesn't exude joy or kindness to anyone. And that's his right. It's certainly not my right to tell him how he should be. But it's just interesting to see that now I am in this club. I work it regularly. And if it was up to him, I wouldn't. But it's not up to him. And that's sort of the whole lesson of the contest format for comedy, in my opinion. Certain clubs, like in Dayton, that's how I got into the Dayton Funny Bone, was by doing well in their contests. And it wasn't till that whole contest season was over that a few of us got picked to start working as MCs. And that was, I don't think I would have got in any other way at that time. And now that contest in Dayton doesn't even exist. So really, people trying to get MC work in Dayton kind of has to come from a referral from a comic in the community or several comics in the community. Or if you're lucky enough to have the general manager come out to a show and see you and like what you did. And that doesn't happen very often. So it's a very apprentice level. I don't even know if that's the right word. It's a very, you got to go out there and just do it. And hopefully somebody catches it and likes it. And if that happens enough times, then you get to be getting paid eventually. And even now, the struggle for me to move to extra levels or work for more bookers. It's not that much different than trying to get yourself booked on open mics or at clubs around the country. It's very much a war of attrition and time and persistence and politeness and being a good person. All those things matter. But watching the contest last night, I was just very thankful that this isn't something I need to do or feel like I need to do in terms of furthering my career. Now, that being said, I spent last week looking up comedy festivals that have competitions as part of their format because I know now I need to be entering some more of these professional, amateur, national festivals. Not necessarily Montreal, but San Francisco, Seattle, these types of things. Whether or not I'm ready to actually enter, I need to be figuring out the format for them. So, moving forward, I'm looking at doing things that are less comfortable. And I've been writing a bunch of new material, which is easier to do than perform it. But if I don't write, it's never going to come out. I think the last year and a half, everything that I've done that's new, I came up with in the moment on stage and just sort of added on to the bits that I was already doing. And now I'm ready to start diverging from those sets completely and talking about what I want to talk about, which I've, to be honest, I've always only talked about what I want to talk about. Went skateboarding this morning. Been itching to go to this park in Grove City, which is I think south of Columbus, and 30-minute drive, drove there, got there and realized it was not the park for me. It's giant bowls. I mean, there's from top to bottom, from the top of the lip to the bottom of the bowl, like 10 feet, 11 feet in some areas. Some of these bowls were 6 feet high, but very narrow. It was scary. And there was only a little bit of the park that I was able to skate confidently. And I fell in the part that I was confident in. I think because my bearings, I think I might have blown a bearing when I landed because I like just maybe did a 2 foot drop off of a ledge, which is no big deal for me. I don't think I've ever fallen doing this before, but when I landed, my board seemed to stop and I shot forward. And yeah, I think I'm hanging it up for the year. I don't want to do anything to interfere with the snowboard season. And I didn't hurt myself at all last year snowboard. Well, I did hurt my knee, but I know how not to do that again. And yeah, so I think I'm, no, I can't say I'll never skate again, but I'm not skating that park ever again. And I'm going to be very careful when I do skate. No more tricks. It's got to be just like the exercise of riding. And I was pretty tired at this point when I fell. I was when I landed and I was like on the ground, I was out of breath and catching my breath. And then when I got in the car, I started to feel a little bit lightheaded, I think, because I don't know what it is when I skateboard. It's a completely different muscle group. The cardio affects me completely different than when I run. When I run, I can tell I can run faster right now because I have enough oxygen in my system. And when I'm starting to get lightheaded, I know it's time to slow down because there's not enough oxygen. I can literally feel it in my body. Whereas with skateboarding, there's been several times when I get done with a run or a line, and I realize that I'm about to pass out from lack of oxygen. And I don't know how to combat that. I think conditioning probably helps me overcome that to some degree, but for the most part, I think I'm holding my breath, and that's a little bit scary. Lots of downloads last week. I assume the catchy title brought some people in, and thank you for any of the new listeners. And it's been a journey on this personal journal of mine that I call Totally Unrelated Podcast. I had interviewed Walta Yosef, a Columbus comedian who is born in Kenya, but she's an American citizen and a local comic. Very funny. I worked with her first time about 2 years ago in my hometown of Yellow Springs and thought, wow, she's way too funny to have just started doing comedy. I didn't realize she had been doing comedy for about 2 weeks, but that came out in the interview. But that'll air beginning of next week. It was too short because we were waiting to go. I had to judge the contest. I got the 6-minute notification from Dan Swartout, and we had to wrap it up. But we did have an interesting conversation, and I think I was left with more questions afterwards. So probably make that a two-parter. I just don't know when the second time I'll get to get her on. But it's always fun talking to somebody, a comic who's got such a unique perspective on comedy and society. So that's sort of what I'm going for. And I also realized that I certainly haven't shied away from interviewing women. I've had two trans people on the show. But I definitely want these types of opinions from people that maybe I'm not listening to enough, or maybe we're not giving enough exposure to. It's not my job to expose them. Certainly, being on my podcast isn't going to change anybody's life or have them. They're not going to use it on their credits. Now, introducing your next comic coming to the stage was recently a guest on Totally Unrelated. I mean, I hope that's the reality one day, but I think the only person who you can use credits being on their podcast as a credit is Joe Rogan. And I've actually heard comics say that that's their credit. And who doesn't want that as a credit? This is the most downloaded comedy podcast in the world, I think. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just saying that. But if he's not number one, he's in the top three. I can say that with the utmost certainties. Tomorrow night, we're going to do a benefit show. Me and my best good friend, Jay Snyders, here in Columbus at some country club. We're going to do a cancer benefit. And Dan was telling me, he was like, show up early. People want to buy you drinks and stuff like that. And I was like, I didn't say anything about it, but I'm going to show up a little bit later. I don't need any drinks bought for me because I'm certainly not going to be drinking them. This whole experiment with Sober October, I want to thank Bert Kreischer personally. I feel like I should send him a text message, but at the same time, he out of maybe 10 text messages that I've sent him in my life, he's responded to two because we were like gonna go somewhere, and I was like, "Yo, heading over. Yo, I'm here," and he was like, "Yo, cool." Yo, I'll be down in 20 minutes. And so, it's not a big deal. His phone probably goes off every 8 seconds, and so I'm not looking for any kind of validation. But I am very thankful for the idea, because I thought this was going to be a lot harder than it's been. Not for any other reason than, when you do things a certain way for so long, it just becomes how you do things. and I hadn't really entertained the idea that I could do them a different way. And having some other people going through this process with me, I know there's probably thousands of people across the country who practice Sober October because he didn't invent it. We looked it up when they first started talking about it, and it was already a thing. He calls his Sobert October, so it's like Sobert, sober and Bert mixed together. But I was listening to his podcast today, and he was also mentioning not feeling that much different, hoping to have had some epiphanies by now. And his wife mentioned that not all epiphanies come with fireworks and flair. You know, some of them are very subtle. And I don't know. Maybe that makes it not an epiphany, but maybe it does. Maybe the whole exercise in and of itself. And so the only epiphany that I've had thus far is one, that I could do it, and two, that this might be my new normal in terms of not imbibing in substances for recreational reasons as much as I used to. I certainly I'm not willing to say that I'll never touch a substance as long as I live. I just know that that's not realistic and it's not really what I want. But with the amount of weight that I've lost, and I don't know, just the overall sense of well-being, I guess I just realized I don't need it. And I think my hyperactivity attention deficit disorder that I was, you know, self-medicating is manageable without. I certainly do think that there's times of the day when I feel like I'm spiraling out of control a little bit with my thoughts, but a little bit of meditation, deep breathing, I'm able to usually rein myself back in pretty quickly. And so I think, you know, I'm willing to examine a longer period of sobriety than I think I was when I first started. Because to be honest, it wasn't something that I felt like I needed in my life. This whole Sober October thing, it wasn't something that I felt like, you know what, I really need to do this. I wasn't, you know, I've never been arrested. I've never sat in the back of a cop car. I've certainly had conversations with police before, and I've certainly had, you know, my well-documented run-ins, but nothing major. And so maybe that means it's time to retire ahead. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. All I know is that when I started, before this whole month came, I told a lot of people that I was going to be doing it. I told my family, I told my mom and dad, and I got a lot of support from them. And then a week into it, I realized that, yeah, this might stick. This might be the new me. And I'm okay with that, you know, but I was okay with myself before. I certainly am not producing anything. Like I said, my desire to work out hasn't been increased at all. If anything, it's been decreased, 'cause just by simply the fact that I'm not doing it. But the weight loss and the lack of bloating and the not eating junk food, I think comes from just being more generally aware and in touch with my feelings in a way that I think a lot of us sometimes shield ourselves. You don't have to take substances to hide from your feelings. A lot of people do other things. I mean, I know some people who have no capability of looking at themselves or talking about themselves in an honest manner. They're living their life perfectly, and screw you if you even question that. You know, that's never been me. I've always been open and honest. That's the way I was raised. You know, I'm a hippie at heart, and I've always been open and honest with my family about who I am. And I don't really feel like I owe that to anybody else. Certainly nobody else's business what I do with my time. So, sharing this whole process has been very therapeutic, and I support anybody that wants to try it for themselves. I don't think it's, for me, making me a better comic per se. I came home after the weekend in Virginia Beach and was looking at some of my notes and realized there was a ton of jokes that I wasn't doing this weekend that I would have normally done, or at least that I've been doing more recently. And I don't think it was that I forgot them or, damaged my memory. I think it was just I was much more in the moment and just sort of talking about what was happening in the crowd or that day for me, just being a little bit more fluid. But the response that I got from the audiences after shows, I mean, I think I sold more t-shirts this last weekend than I've sold all year, not cumulatively, but after six shows. And that, I can't give all that credit to the fact that I was clear-headed or not drinking, but I think I would be fool-hearted not to give some of that credit to that. It definitely, the thing that made it more awkward was comedians wanting to go out after the show, go to another open mic or something like that. My desire to do that without drinking was greatly reduced. Greatly, greatly, great. And even now, thinking about going to an open mic here in Columbus is greatly reduced by the fact that they all take place in a bar. And it's not that I'm afraid that I'll drink if I go to a bar, because that's certainly never been... I don't feel like I have to drink. I don't keep alcohol in the house. I don't drink when I'm home. I don't drink during the week. I would only drink if it was for free at a club or discounted at a club. And that's not the right reason to drink. And I think also the way my body metabolizes alcohol, I can drink a whole bottle of scotch without really having any issues with being sick or overly inebriated. But if I switch off a scotch and drink anything else, then it catches up to me very quickly. I don't know what it is about scotch, but my body turns it into riboflavin or niacin or something. I don't know what it is. But it's funny because I'm sitting here and I'm kind of hunched over and I'm squeezing my belly and I feel like I got all this belly fat, and I think it's just I'm not bloated. Oh, also, I was taking probiotic acidophilus. I don't know if I told you guys about that before, but I just got like some generic Giant Eagle brand, which is the local grocery store. And I take two of those probably every day. I might skip a day here and there, but it has done wonders for like that bloated feeling or that stomach pooch sticking out over my belt. I was getting to the point where I was doing the New York stand for comedy, which is when you have like, say, have both your arms at your side straight down, lift your left arm up over your belly so that it's perpendicular to your legs, and then you use your right arm's elbow to rest on your hand, so you're kind of using your hand as a prop, and then you have the mic up to your face. I was doing that a lot this summer because my stomach was big and I was using my stomach as a crutch, but I also think subconsciously I was trying to hide my stomach. And now when I do that, there's no ledge for me to rest my arm on. Now, that being said, there's still like probably some loose skin or some tightening that I need to do in that region with some muscular building of some sort that I have not been doing as much. But that's my plan for next week, is to get back on the proverbial running horse, because I have a 5K over on Thanksgiving Day in Chicago that I want to do. And I'd like to have a better time than I would like to record a better finish time than I've ever recorded running a 5K. I think current record is a 22 minutes, maybe 21 something, 21:50 maybe is my best time. So I would like to get it sub 20. I would like to finish in, if not under 20, somewhere in the 20s, 20, 22 or something like that. Even that isn't competitive in my age group. I think when I did the Chicago one last time, I was eighth in my age range, but the guy that was first in my age range was like third or fourth overall. I think he ran like a 16-minute 5K or some 17-minute 5K, something ridiculous. I don't have any illusions that that could be me. I would have to train like an Olympic athlete. I would have to lose more weight, gain more muscle, get on some sort of oxygen breathing regimen or something. I don't have the time for that, and that's also not my path. I'm not trying to be an Olympic runner. But I do want to record a good time just for my own shits and giggles. I think that's the thing with skateboarding for me, is that it's always about a competition for myself, making small progress, micro progressions, if you will. And running it's very easy for me to measure those microprogressions because I can use GPS and a timer. I'm listening to a podcast or music when I run. I'm getting updates on my lap speed so I know when to speed up or slow down. The thing is with running, I don't think I've ever hurt myself running. Maybe from doing it too much. I think that's what caused me to have back problems a couple years ago. But the whole idea of skateboarding, it involves a trial by fire, and you get burned when you fall. And when I fell today, it just was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? One, I shouldn't have even been skating at that park. And it wasn't like, it wasn't even a bad fall, but it was the first time I've fallen in about a month. And I just got my hands x-rayed and MRI'd and found out that there was nothing wrong with them. They're just bruised and hurt still. But I don't want to go through that process again. And I don't feel the desire to skateboard as much as I feel the desire to go snowboarding. Now, I'm not going to say I'm never going to skateboard again. I'm not disassembling my deck. I might even skate again later today, but only at parks where I know my line. Get in where you fit in, they say, right? So thank you, guys. We're going to wrap this up here and let me make sure I covered everything. Yep, Blade Runner, go see it. Check out John Morgan, the Raging Cajun, if he comes to your city. And lay off the guest sets. Tomorrow night with Jay, supposed to do a spot Sunday here at the Columbus Funny Bone, but that's going to be LaBelle Crawford instead. Got bumped. No big deal. Well, actually, he is a big deal. I'll probably go check it out. Next week, I'm at this Eagle Radio in Northern Michigan. I don't know much about the gig, but tomorrow morning I get to call into the radio station. Hopefully I get to record both ends of that conversation, and maybe I'll play it for the cast. Hope you are having success and happiness in your life, and if you're not, take a look. Take a look at your behaviors. I was talking to a comedian last night about some hard times that she's going through right now, and we all have them. It's what makes us stronger. And I certainly feel like we're the product of our efforts. You know, I think it's the, I don't even know how to pronounce this, Bhagavad Gita, whatever it is. It's like a Buddhist teachings book. I heard it from Duncan Trussell, so that's who I'm going to cite. I heard from Duncan Trussell that in a book somewhere they said, you are not entitled to the fruits of your labor. You are only entitled to the labor. Stay unrelated.
Like someone else's dream, your sense is so right. The beat.
Thank you for listening. Download more episodes from the Podbean app. Also available at iTunes and Stitcher or at totallyunrelated.com.